Blog Talk Radio.
You're now listening to
Hot Takes
with
Bernola and Eric.
Time of season again, March Madness. I am Eric Nifong. You can find me on Twitter at @E_Nifong. I'm joined by Nolan Haig. You can find him on Twitter at NJH09. And here for another edition of Hot Takes, and where my bracket is absolutely busted. But it's been a great opening week in the games. How did you enjoy them?
Yeah, no, they were a lot of fun. Yeah, unfortunately, we couldn't have been a little more correct in our predictions, but yeah, wouldn't trade it. It was a lot of fun to watch, a lot of close games, a lot of great finishes. Hopefully, it does kind of suck that we don't get as many games next weekend, but the quality of play and the stakes definitely rise from here, and it stays exciting.
Yeah. It's going to be great. And one thing, I know we're going to talk about it a little later, but one thing I noticed is kind of some big-name schools left in there, a couple of them from smaller conferences. But other than that, it's from these major power conferences. So it's kind of interesting in a season that's been parity, basically, not really a great team. So we'll get into that a little later. But I wanted to kick it off here tonight with Adam LaRoche. And a lot of drama this past week about him suddenly retiring because his kid wasn't allowed in the locker room. A lot of back and forth, players backing him, even to talk about a strike during a game to support Adam LaRoche. Chris Sells came out and said a lot. What is your take on this that's happened this past week?
Yeah, when I first heard about it, I was just like, I don't know, it just didn't sound like it was going to be a big deal. Well, it would kind of go away, but the events that followed just, I mean, yeah, it's just keeps building up steam and getting attention. And I don't know, it's hard to say when you don't know every single story, but it seems like there was some sort of a verbal agreement when LaRoche signed the contract year that his son would be able to be with him for the most part. I guess there was some understanding between LaRoche and management of how much he was actually going to be there. He was there for at least 120 games last year, on the road, at home, always in the club, basically at his dad's side the entire time, participating in drills, just being there. I mean, and if, you know what, if nobody minds, if the staff is okay with it, if the players are okay with it, then that's great. Apparently it worked in Washington when LaRoche was with Nationals, and that's fine too, but apparently somebody had a problem, and nobody wants to say who it is. There was a kind of a counter report that came out that, yes, there were multiple players and staff members that were uncomfortable with it or thought it was going too far. And, I mean, obviously it's not – it's the team president's job to be that guy to have those tough conversations, I guess. And the blame shouldn't fall on him, especially because there are people there probably are people that weren't okay with it and just didn't want to be the ones to say it to Adam LaRoche, which, I don't know, it should be a place where professionals are doing their thing, but it's also, you know, it's a different kind of life being having that much money and privilege and to be homeschooled so you can do things like that and spend all this time with your dad. But I don't know. And Chris Sale, I feel like, has just gone way too far. It just seems like at this point he just likes being mad at people and yelling at people and telling them and making them feel bad about themselves.
Yeah, I agree. A lot of things that I've been hearing is, I guess, well, people can't – this is more from the fan perspective, but men just saying, well, you can't just bring your kid to a normal – or to a job, and this isn't a normal job. I mean, we've seen kids and around ball clubs, any sport, all the time. I mean, Chris Paul's kids are around all the time. There's different instances.
Guess we lost him. All right. Well, yeah. Hey. Sorry.
All
about
right.
That.
what happened?
I don't know. All of a sudden you were gone and then you were back and it wasn't letting me let you back on, but we're back on. So I don't remember the last thing you were saying. It was a minute ago though, at least.
Yeah, no, I was just basically saying that Adam LaRoche, the whole situation, I've just been hearing from fans kind of that people can't bring their kids to their jobs, but this isn't a normal job. I mean, we see instances of this happening around all sports where kids come to their work and things like that. I mean, maybe it got out of hand. He's not exactly putting up big numbers or anything. So I don't know if that has a lot to do with it. And the Chris Sale thing, the only thing I kind of wonder is this going to kind of make him so mad at management that he doesn't want to be with the White Sox any longer? And that wouldn't be good for the White Sox, would it?
I mean, no, of course it wouldn't, but it's not like they're last year, after the free agent signings they're making, they're supposed to make this push for the division, and that obviously didn't happen. I mean, it seems like there could be bigger problems, but I mean, Chris Sale is going to say what he wants, and act how he wants because of his talent level. I mean, when he's at his best, there's probably maybe one left-handed pitcher that you could argue would be better than him, in Clayton Kershaw, and he's going to get his way just because he's basically their jewel with their franchise at the moment. But, I don't know. It just doesn't seem like they're going to be able to keep together the current situation that they've got going now if there's going to be this much turmoil. But what makes it even worse is how you basically got Robin Ventura not really doing thing because he's trying to save his own job. So, yeah, just over on the south side.
Yeah, just the weird situation. I kind of thought it was a joke when I first heard it. I didn't think it was going to be much, but it's turned into quite a thing. So it's been interesting to watch. And
yeah. And just another thing, I mean, if Adam LaRoche is going to just walk away from $13 million over something like this, not necessarily the money, but walk away from his career, from baseball like this, then obviously he has reached that point where his family is more important to him than his job and his career. And I'm sure he's made plenty of money to where, yeah, he doesn't have to worry about this extra $13 million that he could get. But if you wanted to spend more time with your family, you could have retired already. he kind of grew up in the clubhouse with his dad being a major league ball player, and grew up around that. And I can understand, I guess, wanting your son to have that same experience because you enjoyed it and it had such a big impact on your life. But if you want to spend time with your family, you can spend time with your family. You don't have to keep that whole thing going and make special arrangements with a team that it doesn't fly everywhere, obviously.
Yeah, I couldn't say it better. I pretty much not really on anyone's side in this. I'm just going to kind of watch and see how it pulls out because it's definitely been an interesting and a really weird sports story. It's just crazy the different stories that come out and how this one has just taken off and made a player retire because he couldn't have his kid in the locker room. It's just been crazy. So I don't know. I don't know if this will have a huge impact on the White Sox this year. It'll be interesting because, yeah, like you said, they've kind of went out and are supposed to be towards the top in the AL Central, and they haven't been. So I don't know if this really helps on the team chemistry-wise and trying to get that goal.
Yeah, I've seen talk about how it could be a moment. This is going to be the moment that either makes or breaks them, and that 6 months from now or whatever, we can talk about how this was a galvanizing moment for that clubhouse. But it's the whole situation is just so ridiculous. It just doesn't seem like any good can come from it.
Yeah,
you know, you've got to the point where your star pitcher is calling out the team president and calling him a liar and how he should have been the one to leave and he shouldn't be working there anymore. Just a lot of it seems like you can't exactly go back from that. And yeah, and I do. I think that will eventually lead to more than likely Chris Sale finding somewhere else to play when the opportunity presents itself.
Yeah. No doubt. So, yeah. But, that's enough White Sox talk for right now. So, let's go ahead and talk about the Warriors real quick. We had a huge game yesterday Saturday night between the Spurs and the Warriors. Spurs at home, trying to protect home court like they've done the last 43 times. And, they did it. Held the Warriors to 79 points. Steph Curry is 1-for-12 from three. He did not have a good game at all. And the Spurs were able to shut down the Warriors. What did you think anything about the game? And do you think the Warriors are still gonna break the mark? They have to go. They got to win tonight. Barely. It was a close game against the Timberwolves.
Okay.
But
I was checking on that score. Yeah. I wasn't sure if they were pulling off. It was pretty close there, but yeah, if they won tonight, all right, then that, yeah, okay. But
they won tonight. They got to go 10-2 the rest of the way. Last game of the season is in Golden State against the Spurs. So what do you think?
I think by the time that the Warriors Spurs play again, most of this will have already been decided whether or not they're going to get this record, obviously. And I mean, even at that point, the Spurs might not even play any starters just because Greg Popovich and, you know, resting people, they've obviously got – they're just as focused as the Warriors when it would come to the end goal, obviously. But yeah, no, they're obviously hard to beat at home. The Spurs, we got that series. It'd be a lot of fun. You just got to wonder if the Spurs can hang for 7 games. I think the Warriors are going to, if not tie the record, beat it. They only got to go, is it 11-2 or 10-2 now down the stretch, down the rest of the way?
Since they win tonight, they have to go 10-2.
10-2, yeah. Left. So yeah, I think that
Clippers in there.
Right, Clippers, Mavs,
Trailblazers,
the Spurs, or game against the Blazers, and then I can't remember the other. I think the Grizzlies were in there, but anyway, I think that they might as well finish it off. And just keep right on going. I think 2 losses should be pretty easy to avoid down the rest of the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Steph Curry's kind of in a slump right now. Didn't have a good game tonight either. So he'll have to kick out of that if they do want to break it. But, yeah, I think they're going to break it, and the countdown is officially on.
Yeah, another interesting thing that I thought about the game against the Spurs and Warriors game in particular was how the Spurs matched up early with a smaller lineup to kind of counteract what the Warriors have been doing with Andrew Bogut out. Do you think that kind of smaller lineup is going to be able to help them out in a playoff series if it got to that?
Well, I think that I'm not really sure. Tim Duncan didn't play. I think he played 8 minutes on Saturday for the Spurs. I think that's going to be a big thing in their series. I really don't think he's going to play that much. I think LaMarcus Aldridge will get a lot of time, and I think Andrew Bogut with the Warriors will actually he's pretty underrated for that team. He's a good shot blocker and a good passer for a big guy. And I think he could slow down the inside of the Spurs, and I think he'd be big. And I think they were also missing Iguodala, who I think is their best bench player, obviously, and provides the Warriors with another look. So, I don't know. I think it's going to be a good matchup. We'll have to see if we see it. Still think the Thunder have a shot to beat the Spurs. So we'll have to see.
Yeah, definitely. That's all I got on the Warriors. Any other NBA things you got before we want to dive into this tournament again?
No. Let's finish out the show with some tournament talk here.
All right. Well, I guess there's all sorts of places we can start. Quite a few upsets. Like, what was it? 10 double-digit seeds into the second round, most ever.
Yeah, most ever. It was a lot of upsets. Huge upsets that really broke my bust my bracket, and a lot of good storylines going forward. Not ones that I guess the committee see, but yeah, a lot of drama. Thursday was all right, but things got really going on Friday and into Saturday. So it was a good weekend. And I guess the game that stood out to me most was in the first round had to be Michigan State and Middle Tennessee State. Was a huge shocker. Michigan State was one of the favorites in a lot of people's brackets. I think like 90% of brackets busted after they lost or something like that. And Yeah, Middle Tennessee State took it to them, and Michigan State had no answer. They couldn't get stops on defense, and I think that was the biggest upset of the weekend, no doubt.
Yeah, going over it, I mean, you always think about, especially these last few years, is that 15 seed gonna pull it off? And the tournament is just works in mysterious ways like that. It's always the team you least expect. And I mean, this year it just happened in Michigan State. Michigan State had a lot of experience. They had one of the best players in the country, and they had, of course, Tom Izzo, tournament wizard. Tough to see it coming, but yeah, Middle Tennessee definitely earned it. They led the whole way, and just kind of dominated. It was you never really felt like Michigan State was going to come back.
Yeah, they couldn't get any stops, and yeah, I think that's the worst loss in Tom Izzo's career. And it was one thing I just take away every year that this happens, just the teams that lose in there, and they're just the heartbreak. It's a lot of ups and downs. I mean, just look at Northern Iowa. They were up on Friday night. They were as happy as can be, and then yesterday, not so much. So, yeah, the tournament is crazy, crazy animal. It really really brings out the best in teams and the worst in teams, I guess. So it's just a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah. Just another game that I really enjoyed watching was Arkansas Little Rock over Purdue in double overtime, of course, because anytime a game goes to overtime or God willing more than one overtime, it's just always awesome. And of course for Arkansas Little Rock, Josh Haggins, 31 points, 7 rebounds, 5 steals, hit the 3 from the bracket on the the edge of the bracket on the middle of the court logo to tie the game at the end of regulation, and then ended up making another shot on the last possession of the first overtime to tie the game again. Just one of those storied Cinderella performances that was just a lot of fun to watch and super exciting.
Yeah, that was a really good game. I actually didn't watch any of that game. That was one of the games I flipped over to at the end when it was close and got to watch the end of it. And it was, Little Rock, Arkansas was spectacular in that game. And I think we would be wrong to not mention it wasn't really a close game, but Stephen F. Austin and what they did to West Virginia, they out West Virginia to West Virginia in the game. And Thomas Walkup is he's not flashy, he's not gonna take over, but he has a really good game, and he impressed me all weekend. Probably should have beat Notre Dame, but last second tip in and Notre Dame ends up dancing to the Sweet 16. But Stephen F. Austin really put on a show, and Thomas Walkup I think was my favorite player throughout the first round from any of the schools here.
Yeah, Stephen F. Austin got pretty disrespectful on West Virginia towards the end there, just raining threes and putting dunks down. But yeah, that was a lot of fun to watch too. Of course, I mean, shouldn't have been too surprised about Stephen F. Austin and their ability to compete with their recent tournament success. But yeah, expected more out of West Virginia. It wasn't like the press wasn't working. Stephen F. Austin was barely breaking it. It wasn't pretty, but they were managing to get it done and find open shots and knock them down.
Yeah, pretty much. So who was your biggest surprise? Not necessarily an upset, but just the team that you thought maybe would lose early that's still playing right now.
That's still playing. Man, okay. Well, I guess we got to mention Wisconsin. and their buzzer beater. I would not have expected Wisconsin. I don't think I picked them to. No, I definitely didn't pick them to get out of the first round. But their buzzer beater was actually pretty crazy. I actually didn't get to see the end of that game because I was watching Texas A&M and Northern Illinois or Northern Iowa. So. Wisconsin definitely surprised me. Syracuse, they kind of lucked out with not having to play Michigan State, but Syracuse kind of squeaked their way into the tournament and now is in the Sweet 16.
Yeah, those are definitely some surprises. I think there were quite a bit of surprises here for me. One other one was, it's not so much a surprise, but Iowa State, they've had some tournament troubles in the past and actually have made quite a bit of a statement. They won by 13 in their first round and 17 in the second round. So they have a huge game with Virginia coming up, and if they can win it, they have the team to go to the Final Four, and they could do it. This, I know a lot of people picked them last year, but maybe we're just a year behind, so be interesting to see. And another one is kind of in the same situation as Villanova. They took care of business, and they look angry, and they look like they are on a mission to get somewhere where they haven't been since, I think, the early 2000s. I think Villanova's made it to Final Four recently in the last 10 years, but they haven't won a championship since the 80s, and they look like they're on a mission right now. So those are probably my two biggest surprises as far as actually being able to put together a couple wins on the first weekend, which they've kind of struggled with lately. So,
yeah, as for Iowa State, I think the Iowa State-Virginia game is going to be an interesting matchup. Differing styles there, definitely. And how they pace a play and things like that. Do we want to get into, I guess, these picks yet? Or do we I guess we still got a little ways to go.
Well, I figure we could, give it 5 more minutes or so, talk about these games a little more. I know we haven't talked about you and I and A&M yet, mentioned you were watching it. How crazy. Up 12 with 44 seconds left. Actually got a score in there. So, but A&M was able to tie it somehow. How crazy was that? And you could just kind of see it unravel right before your eyes. You and I had it in the bags, and they just couldn't get the inbounds. And then when I think it was Wes Washburn tried to throw it out of bounds, and the Aggies grabbed it and just took it in for the easy layup. Tie the game. Just all unraveled from there. But then one thing, they went to 2 overtime, so it's not like you and I just rolled over after all that happened and actually forced them to go to yet another overtime. So that was such a great game, and a game that looked like was going to be fairly easily won by the Panthers.
Yeah, they looked to have been controlling it the entire time. It looked like they were moving on to take on Oklahoma, but the most impressive thing about A&M's comeback, I mean, not besides the fact that it basically happened in 33 seconds of game time, but they also did it without really fouling. I mean, they forced turnovers, they trapped, they played some defense, and forced the Panthers into bad passes and decisions, and things just, they kind of unraveled. They panicked. One thing led to another, and before they knew it was tied. And then the other puzzling thing that I thought was the half-court heave with about 5 seconds left in the first overtime, which actually gave enough time for A&M to get their own 75-foot shot off that actually came pretty close itself. But it's, you know, heat of the moment, I guess. Not really sure. But maybe was feeling it just a little bit too much with from the other night. But, yeah, another fun game and a great second-round game.
Yeah, it really was. And that was the game, like you mentioned. I think it was like 3 minutes of real time was when Wisconsin hit that buzzer beater and won their game. And then the late night wasn't bad either between Oregon and St. Joe's, where a team that a lot of people were kind of wondering about being the one seed was Oregon. Oregon's still playing. Great game against St. Joe's. St. Joe's actually had the lead at the end. But two huge threes, one by a freshman, Dorsey, and the other one by Dylan Brooks. Oregon the lead both times, lead back. And the second one by Dylan Brooks, they didn't get the lead up again. And they're still dancing.
Yep. Another thought I have about the Sweet 16, six ACC teams. And once again, you kind of get the Big 12 kind of. They did get three teams in. So, I mean, it's three out of seven. I guess that isn't bad, but it just, as far as conferences go, is it just different when it comes to the tournament, or are we really seeing, is the Big 12 maybe not as good as we think it is?
I think the Big 12's good. I just think, without a doubt, the best basketball conference in the nation, in the world. But they, I think the Big 12's good. I think they have a couple of teams that are in there that just kind of struggle in the tournament, for whatever reason that may be. And other than that, I think they're a good conference. And I think we're going to see at least one of those teams in the Final Four. So we'll have to see if they can do it. But I think we will. I think a couple of these ACC teams will lose coming up. And the Big Ten, actually a big surprise to me. And being able to move the teams on that they did in Indiana and Wisconsin. So.
Yeah. All right, well,
also, who would have thought that the last SEC team standing would be Texas A&M?
Yeah, that is a good point. I can't really blame Kentucky for losing to Indiana, though. I mean, that was always going to be a tough game. Everybody wanted it, and they got it, and it was a good one. Just Indiana was able to come out on top. Hard fought. For some reason, these two teams get together. It's good, but
yeah.
Who else you got? That lost in the SEC. Yeah.
I don't even remember. Did they have one too? And
doesn't look like it.
Yeah, I think those were the only two teams that made it out of the SEC. So
yeah.
Got our Sweet 16 matchups set here. So do you kind of want to just go through and see what we like to them over these last 10 minutes?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's go.
All right. First we have KU and Maryland. KU the one seed, Maryland the five seed. Maybe not as far as some people. Maybe people didn't really like Maryland coming in. I know I was kind of nervous about them. Thought maybe they could get upset by someone. They didn't, and they're here. They definitely have the talent to defeat KU. But do you think they'll be able to do it?
No, Maryland just doesn't strike me as a team that's gonna beat Kansas. This Kansas just the far, like I said last week, the farther Kansas goes in the tournament, it seems the stronger they get. And Maryland just doesn't seem like they have the matchup to just take on the completeness that KU has going right now. Ugh. So yeah, I gotta have KU moving on.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to agree, but I do think Maryland really has a good shot to win it. They're gonna have to get a huge game from Melo Trimble, and I think Diamond Stone, if he can stay out of foul trouble, he can provide him an inside presence. And Rashad Suleiman, they have some shooters on the outside, so I definitely think they have a chance. And I think it's all gonna hinge on what kind of performance Melo Trimble has. But I'm going to have to take the Jayhawks, too. I think their team's too strong, and I think they're going to go to the Elite Eight. So the team that they could possibly face is between Miami and Villanova. Miami got out of Wichita State, had a big lead early. Wichita State actually came all the way back, took a one-point lead, but Miami stuck with it and proved to be the better team. Villanova's kind of had their way through the first two rounds, not really close in either game. I think that could kind of come back and bite them if they're in a close game. That's why I'm going to take Miami in this game. I think it's going to be close, and I think Miami, having been in a couple close games, will be able to seal it, and I think they'll be taking on KU in the Elite Eight.
All right. I'm going to have to disagree there. Like you said, Wichita State came back on Miami, and they basically just needed Angel Rodriguez to go kind of unconscious to pull that one out. And also, I agree with what you're talking about with Villanova. They've looked real good in these first two games, kind of just taking care of business. And are on a mission, so I'm going to go Nova.
See who is going to go in the other bracket down here. We're going to go with Oregon and Duke. Maybe a Duke team that hasn't been the best over the past couple years, but they're here. And I think they have the team to defeat Oregon, but I don't think they're going to be able to. They've let a couple teams come back into it that had a huge lead on Yale. Yale almost came back all the way and got that game. They kind of had their struggles with Wilmington, and I think Oregon's a better team than both those teams, and I think Oregon will be able to keep dancing. And the team that kind of shocker at number one is going to get to the Elite Eight at least.
Again, I'm going to have to disagree with you. I think Brandon Ingram is playing ridiculous right now, along with Grayson Allen, nor getting his usual points. I think Duke's just warming up, and Oregon just—they're good, but not going to be good enough. This is where Duke shines. So give me the Blue Devils.
All right, well, going to take them on, A&M or OU here. I'm going to have to go with OU. I think that Buddy Hield's going to have a huge game, and I don't think A&M will be able to stop him, so I'm going to take Oklahoma here.
Yeah, I'm gonna go Oklahoma too. Buddy Hield's is also having himself a pretty decent tournament. You can just tell on the floor he's on another level, and yeah, A&M just had no business beating Northern Iowa.
Yeah, I definitely agree. So real quick, so with your teams that you picked here, who do you think we'll see in the Final Four come next weekend?
Well,
I guess I have to stick
with my original thought that this is Oklahoma revenge bracket. So give me Oklahoma and Kansas.
All right, I am actually going to take Miami and Oklahoma here. So I think Miami will defeat KU in the Elite Eight.
All right.
All right. So
moving sounds on good. To the that's, east. That's one half down.
Yeah. So moving on to the East bracket, we'll have to go a little quicker here. But got North Carolina, Indiana. I like North Carolina in this matchup. I think that they have the team with the most talent in the country. It's whether they put that talent together and actually put it on the court. And I think they will in this tournament. And, yeah, give me North Carolina over Indiana.
Yep, same for me. When they're at their best, they're better than anybody.
Yeah, so they could possibly take on Notre Dame or Wisconsin here. I'm going to have to roll with Wisconsin. Don't necessarily know why. I just, the way they've been playing, I'm going to take Wisconsin here. Maybe they have a little luck on their side.
Yeah, this is probably the hardest matchup to get a feel on. But yeah, guess I'm gonna go to Notre Dame just to be different. It's really just seems like a toss up to me.
Yeah, it really does. I do like Zach August and some other and Demetrius Jackson for Notre Dame, but I don't know. I'm just maybe it would be from where Wisconsin was at the beginning of the year to see them in the Elite Eight would just be remarkable. So yeah, gonna go Wisconsin. So Virginia and Iowa State. I think Virginia is gonna keep rolling. I think that they don't see Michigan State in their path, and this will be the year that maybe they get to the Final Four.
I don't think so. I think Virginia gets another exit short of where they want to be. I feel like Iowa State has built up some confidence, and they're if they can just make their shots, Virginia's not going to be able to. Do anything about it.
All right. Taking on either the winner of Gonzaga or Syracuse, I really like where the way Gonzaga's been playing, and I think Gonzaga's going to pull it out.
Yeah, give me Gonzaga. between them and Syracuse, they definitely look better and are headed that way, so
yeah,
go Zag.
So in my Elite Eight matchup, Carolina and Virginia are going to be the two teams that are representing that side of the bracket in the Final Four. So I have KU Miami and UNC Virginia at this point in the remodified picks in our brackets.
Yeah, all right. I guess I'm going to have to take, North Carolina over Notre Dame and Iowa State over Gonzaga.
All
Iowa
right,
State's year, I guess.
Three Big 12 teams.
Yeah,